CD 8.
My messenger and I were mounted, but we had the deuce of a job forcing our way up the crowded slope and along the narrow roadway. It was churned to mud by recent rains, and the carts carrying the guns were up to the axles in the red glue. The great mortar Sevastopol was chained in place on its enormous cart, with hundreds of hauliers straining on its huge horses, slithering and ploughing through the muck, and Theodore himself on the cart yelling orders and encouragement. It began to rain, coming down in stair rods that pitted the mud like buckshot, and the steam came off the sweating gangs in clouds. We were sodden in no time, and our beasts were fairly streaming down their flanks. Theodore waved and roared to me to come on the wagon with him, which I was glad to do, for he had Samuel and a couple of servants holding great brollies overhead. Even so, he was soaked, and presently tore off his shirt and stood bare to the waist, laughing and rubbing the water over his chest and arms as though he were in a bath. He seemed in capital spirits, exulting over the damage that his mortar would do.
"For there has never been such a weapon in the world, and how will your soldiers be able to endure it? Even its thunder will terrify the bravest. They will scatter like frightened sheep."
I said he'd never seen British and Indian soldiers, and they'd not scatter, because they knew that noise never killed anyone. He looked a bit downcast at this, so I asked him, greatly daring, if he'd decided to fight.
"If I must," cries he, "I do not want war, but who is this woman who sends her soldiers against a king? By what right does she come to steal my country?"
I wasn't going to argue, and he ran on about how he had been insulted, and it was not to be borne. He had written in goodwill and friendship as one monarch to another, and had been ignored, which I knew was true, and he'd never have laid a finger on any of our people if Cameron hadn't conspired with his enemies, the Egyptians, and he'd have let that pass even if only he'd been shown the courtesy due his rank. But it was plain that the British government looked down on African kings as petty rulers of no account. So, what else could he do, by the power of God, but defy those who had despised and affronted him, even if he died for it? With him shouting at me through the downpour, getting angrier by the minute, and poor Samuel struggling with his brolly in the wind and beseeching me with his eyes to say something to turn away wrath, I cried that Theodore was absolutely right. He'd been disgracefully put upon, no question, and it was just a shame that so many fine men, Ab and British, should have to die because our Foreign Office had no bloody manners. Even as I said it, I realised that I'd struck a good line, so I expanded on the arrogance, stupidity, and downright laziness of our civil servants. But what could you expect from folk who'd gone to disgusting dens of vice and ignorance like Harrow and Eton? And had he given any further thought to the idea of sending that splendid little lad to Rugby? Capital school. Been there myself. It may be that the best way to talk to a maniac is to drivel as much as he does, especially if you don't let him get a word in. My balderdash quite disconcerted him, and by good luck, the great wagon suddenly lost a wheel. We had to leap clear for our lives, and Sevastopol finished up to its trunnions in mud. It took a couple of hours to right it, and another hour to reach the top of Fala, by which time the rain had cleared and the sun broke through the sullen clouds. And there, far across the plain of Aragi, was the Dalanta Plateau, above the Bekello, black with the tiny figures of men and animals. "Hurry, hurry, old Bob," thinks I, "you're almost there." Gabri, the Ab Field Marshal, was in charge of emplacing the guns, and making by far too good a job of it for my liking, while Theodore stood Napoleon-like on the edge of the bluff, arms folded, somberly regarding the distant deployment of the army that was coming to destroy him. He seemed not at all alarmed, remarking that it would be most gratifying to see how a European general disposed his troops, and was it true that Napier was the best commander of his day? I said he was the best we had, careful and steady but sure, perhaps not as inspired as Wolsey or the American Lee, but safer than either, and less prodigal of his soldiers' lives than Grant. He nodded.
"You think he will destroy me?"
says he, and I saw what I hoped was a chance. "Not if you meet him in love and friendship, Ghetto. Those were the words you used to me, if you remember."
"I said if he came in love and friendship."
He pointed towards the Bekello.
"Do you see them there? He is the invader. I am the besieged. Would you have me submit to the thief?